Muller House meeting, Thursday afternoon, 22nd September 1977. Those of you who were present this morning when we went out for our meditative walking may recollect that it was suggested, let there be listening, let there be looking, rather than think in terms of I am looking or I am listening. This way of approaching the realization of living in communion is a very important way of approach. Let there be listening, which means the pure use of the senses. The pure use of the senses means that there is no reaction from me as I listen. Ordinarily, we always react to what we hear or see with a thought, with an idea, with a judgment. This is good. No, that is not so good. This is right. This is wrong. And when we use our senses that way, we always use them hindered by our own conditioning, by our own limitations, our own prejudices particularly, our own assumptions and preconceptions. So the result is that the listening isn't as complete and as perfect as it can be. So, when we hear a speaker, let us try and listen without reaction. Let us give complete attention. Let complete attention flow out in the act of listening. Then that listening produces the right kind of change in us. The kind of change which purifies the psyche and puts us more and more in tune with the underlying reality of that to which we are listening, whether it be words or music or the sounds of nature or anything. This is the way the senses become purified, the psyche becomes purified, and the obstructions to living in communion become removed. It is very hard to appreciate this in fullness, and it is still harder to practice it throughout the day. So now, if we try and listen with a completely open mind, like a clean slate, with a completely open heart, like that of an innocent child, then that listening will be truly worthwhile and it will be profitable. As I said, this is not easy. It is really very difficult indeed. Because from childhood, we were brought up and educated in such a manner that we do not use our senses in this manner. Now you see, when I pause a little bit, isn't the brain immediately talking all the time inside? It's chattering away quite merrily. So that the innermost being in us is never quiet. Now let us consider another point in this connection. When we meet here like this, or listen to any speaker, we have the attitude that we are going to learn something. If the speaker is a speaker of distinction and well known in the world, we imagine, oh, now I am going to learn a lot from him. Yes, of course, you can certainly learn. But let it not be thought that the speaker is a teacher, a professional teacher. If any speaker professes to teach, apart from teaching the things of the material world, a particular technique or a skill, that's quite a different matter. But if anybody professes to be a teacher of life, a man who tells you how you ought to live, then you needn't waste your time on him at all. I can't teach you anything. I am not a teacher. What can I teach you? Whatever I say will naturally be interpreted by you according to your own innate knowledge and wisdom and what you have acquired. That is why, because this interpretive activity by the brain goes on, you will understand and agree with or disagree with what I say according to your own understanding. That is all. I'm not teaching you anything about the art of living. I can't do that. All I can do is to be like a man who rings a bell. I'm a bell ringer. That is all. And what does the bell do? It awakens you. It calls you. It tells you now is the time to go to church or go to school or something like that. But the bell ringer doesn't teach you anything at all. He only rings a bell. And if he is a skillful bell ringer, you will feel a certain attraction, a certain inward pleasure at listening to his bell ringing. Now, I am not a skillful bell ringer at all. I can't ring bells with any expertise. I just make a noise, a sound. But if your mind is open and your heart is truly given to discover, your heart is given to discover what may be the truth of life and the real meaning of the fulfillment of life, then even a poor bell ringer like myself could help you to awaken inwardly. And as you awaken inwardly, then your listening, your looking, your touching, your experiencing becomes creative for you. And that means that you don't acquire anything. You don't acquire knowledge that way. But you grow in wisdom. Wisdom is a wonderful faculty of the mind, of the soul. When we acquire knowledge, we just collect facts and patterns of thought and so on. But when wisdom comes to life inside, it creates and it releases true intelligence. And true intelligence means the ability to see, to know the truth of a thing the moment it is in front of you. You see how different this is from ordinary learning and from what ordinarily passes as teaching. There is a real thing called teaching, as when we go to school to learn a subject or to a factory to learn a particular skill or whatever it is, or to the kitchen to learn how to cook. There is teaching and learning in that sense. Here there is only learning, because you care, you love the truth. And if that thing, love, is true love, which cannot be described, which cannot be contained within a little box or something, then in that state of love, that inner wisdom comes to life and you grow in understanding and in communion with everything. You live in communion. And the faculty, the power to continue to live in communion grows in you. This is spiritual growth. This is religious living. This, if you like, you may call the road to fulfillment as a perfect human being. But it is a road where you don't go there from here. The road begins here. You keep walking here. You keep growing here. You come to fulfillment here. This is the marvel, the mystery. If we can feel this, begin to understand it in such a manner that with every breath of life that we take, we are throbbing in harmony with this reality, then everything becomes wonderful for you. The whole world turns inside out. That is, your own self turns inside out. It is no longer like a prison house holding you in. The prison walls have dissolved, have vanished. Like the clouds vanished from the mountains this morning after so many days. So please don't feel that I'm going to teach you anything at all, but you can learn. And this is very important. Let us look at some of the things in us which obstruct, prevent our power to live in communion. And in order to discover this, let us start at the beginning, which is not a beginning in time. In eternity, the word beginning doesn't have our meaning. Our life is actually in eternity. But we are conscious of it as moving in time and space. It's not very easy to sort of get hold of this, but just listen. Don't let the brain try to say, now what does it mean? Just listen. Just get the feel of it. This timeless beginning. This timeless beginning, if we can just feel it with our hearts, puts us immediately in tune with the source of everything. With that ultimate reality from which, when we talk about these things, we can say everything started. But nothing starts and goes in the way that you get into a car in Elmau and you start and go to Munich or whatever it is. Not in that sense. This starting is a vibrating in tune with, and that is in your own mind, in your own heart, in your own innermost consciousness. What is this starting? What is this ultimate reality? Look how absurd the question is. What is ultimate reality? You can ask, what is a microphone? And you can say, look, this is a microphone. You can ask, what is a piano? And you can show or play a piano and say, this is a piano. Can you do that with ultimate reality? And yet look at the number of philosophers who have written books and books about ultimate reality. The thing which is completely unknowable by the brain. Why unknowable by the brain? Because that which the brain knows is something which we talk about and can talk about. But whatever we can talk about is a limited, finite thing. It comes into being, It has its lifespan and then it perishes. Is ultimate reality something which comes, has a lifespan and perishes? If it were, that would deny the real significance of ultimate reality. So we must recognize from the start that ultimate reality can never be described. But the extraordinary thing is this: in what do we live and move and grow and die and have our being and everything? In what? Just precisely in this unknown, unknowable ultimate reality. That is the extraordinary thing. We can say a thing like this, that as far as we human beings can feel out ultimate reality, we can be in tune with this extraordinary, invisible, intangible, creative energy from which everything emerges. And this creative energy we can sort of feel as something which is still and quiet but vibrating. It's alive on the one hand and it moves on the other hand. Both things happen together. The one we can call chaos, the Greek chaos, its original meaning is not disorder. That is a very secondary meaning. The original meaning of chaos is reality which has not yet restricted itself and given rise to a cosmos. Cosmos, which emerges, comes out of this unknown, invisible chaos, is the same creative energy which has somehow restricted itself into shapes and forms, making a pattern which in itself is a complete harmony. Now we in the West are very fortunate in having our music. Harmony doesn't mean merely pleasant sounds. Harmony is not static. Music moves all the time. But it moves within itself. The different parts of music move in such a manner that you move into positions which we call discords, and then we make the parts of music move into positions which we call concords. And it is this living quality of the nature of music which means the harmony of the whole. Is it not? It's a living thing. We are living creatures. And we emerge out of this living, creative energy in eternity. We can never describe it. We can say certain words. And that is why I asked you in the beginning to just listen to the words without trying to put meanings, but because every particular meaning we put is a false meaning. Does it sound very difficult? Perhaps it does. But then, supposing you had a gift as a pianist, is it not very difficult to play the finale, the fugue of the Hammerklavier Sonata perfectly, to make a great harmony out of it? You hear an unskilled pianist play it and you say, oh, he's not a first-class artist. But when you hear the perfect pianist play it, you say, good heavens, how wonderful, this is marvelous, this is alive. And you are changed permanently by listening to that. Something has transformed you. You are nearer the heart of that reality which is unknown and unknowable, which you cannot describe, which you cannot confine or put into a box and say, this is ultimate reality. Now you see why I said, I can't teach you anything. But if we together, as the speaker speaks, if we together can listen, really listen, this creative energy functions freely in us. And chaos and cosmos are in completely harmonious relationship. In some such way as this, in words and in concepts, I can suggest the deepest feeling, the deepest meaning of living in communion. You see, you have to listen perfectly, restfully, be at ease. And if you are at ease in the body, then you will be at home, not only in your own body, not only in this room, but in the whole cosmos. You will be part of this universal harmony, which is cosmos chaos interplaying. The divine play, which never began, which will never end. Now, in connection with this, we have talked a little bit about the manifestation of the the manifestation of this creative energy as a cosmos. But are you, am I, fully conscious of this cosmos? Why do we talk? Why do we form ideas which always have a counterpart? If we say this is right, it means that that is wrong or not so right, doesn't it? That is what I mean by the counterpart. This is how we are ordinarily conscious. And the nature of our consciousness is dependent upon the nature of the living body, which is conscious. The human body, we say body, but actually it is a psychophysical organism. It's not just a material body. It is not just a soul, a psyche. Have you ever seen a soul walking down the street without a body? And have you ever seen a living body walking down the street, a living body which was utterly soulless or mindless? We never have. We are psychophysical organisms. And as such, we have our own extraordinary sensitivity, this peculiar sensitivity which enables us to experience what is outside the psychophysical organism. We commonly say we use our sense, our senses of sight and touch and hearing. We use our memory, our knowledge, and so forth. Perfectly true. But all this is part of a sensitivity which, when fully grown, has no limits. It doesn't mean no limits in size, but no limits in capacity. At present, this sensitivity is very slight. Now it is this sensitivity which characterizes the living psychophysical organism, which really is the meaning of the word mind. The psyche and mind can be looked at in such a way that we do not confuse mind with psychical phenomena. I don't mean all sorts of, these spiritualistic phenomena, but our ordinary mental processes of thought and feeling. Mind, the real meaning of mind, as far as I have been able to see it, is this. Mind is the name I can give to that aspect of creative energy through whose action the whole cosmos comes into being. We say we think with the mind. That is what we try to do. Then, when we try to reach into deep things, we say that the thought in the mind of God produced the universe. But you see, we are thinking in terms of analogy. What this little psychophysical organism can do, we are saying God can do. But you see, this is a little bit absurd, isn't it? You look at a fly or an ant or a bee. You look at a bird or a dog. You look at a dolphin or one of the more advanced apes. How do they interpret the world in which they live? They also understand up to a point. But what will be, supposing we talk of them in terms of mind, what will be the thought in their mind? It will be something which, well, I can't tell you what, but something obviously much less than what we call the thought in our minds, wouldn't it? Now, we forget that according to the organism, that is the real meaning of the word, the thought in the mind of so and so. Now, if we ascribe mind to God, or to this creative energy, to the absolute or infinite, or whatever word you like to use, if we ascribe mind to it, we slip into the mistake of thinking of that mind like our mind. Well, obviously not. The dolphin, clever as it is, the elephant or the ant or the bee, has its limits, which are quickly reached. You and I can see it because we are much more evolved. Now, in the same way, we human beings, even if we are geniuses, even if we are saints, great mystics who are also giant intellectuals, like a St. Paul or Eckhart or anybody like that, you see, even if we are like that, we soon reach our limits. But we forget that we reach our limits. And we forget above all that it is because we are limited creatures, we are conscious in this limited way. And the outstanding characteristic of this consciousness, which functions in a limited way, is that we think in terms of separation, of differences. We are not conscious in terms of wholeness, of integration. We are conscious in terms of analysis. And analysis always means separating the thing. So, we say the thought in the mind of God, in the divine mind, the divine concept. If you study, for example, that set of teachings which are called the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus, that is the Hellenistic form in which the ancient Egyptian teachings along these lines were put out. If you examine them, you will find this extraordinary statement. And then, God, all Father Mind, produced man, his child, co-equal with him. And God fell in love with man, his child, because he was so like his father, God himself, creator. He fell in love with him because he was so like his father, and he was so beautiful. What an extraordinary thing to write and to say. Now, when we read that or hear that, what does our brain do? It immediately makes pictures, our limited pictures, which are always misleading, because we don't acknowledge our limits. We are even actually unconscious, we are ignorant that we are limited. And when we reach our limits, even to the extent of the profoundest thought, the sublimest state of mind and experience, even then we are less than the dust where the ultimate is concerned, where the total reality, the supreme truth is concerned. We are the people who function in such a manner that we split up the harmony and we can't put the pieces together again in the ordinary way, unless we awake to our own limitations, really see them, and then understand them. Don't try to get rid of the limitations. Understand the limitations. This is the mystery of what happens in the psyche in relation to mind. Now, mind, this universal energy, which has no characteristics, which is utterly pure and perfect and creative, coming in touch with the body, with matter, gives rise to your psyche. The roots of your psyche are the brain, the nervous system, the ductless glands principally. Because they determine, they lay down a blueprint of how universal mind and universal matter coming together in terms of you, the living organism, are going to function and display your particular qualities and activities. So you can say, my psyche, because that is distinctive of you and limited to the organism. But it is better not to say my mind. Just as it is much better not to say my God or my Atma or my spirit or my immortal soul. You cannot possess the immortal. You cannot possess and confine the infinite. You see? But the psyche, yes. The body, yes. Because that is limited. You see? Now, the obstructions to living in communion principally reside in the psyche. It is here that we find the roots of ignorance. It is here that the difficulty starts. If we make particular conceptions and present particular techniques, this, do this, that and the other, and it will purify the psyche. The psyche is not like a carpet which you can clean by using a hoover. The psyche is not purified that way. The psyche is a living organism. If there were living organisms on the carpet or the floor and you put a hoover over it, you'll kill the organisms. It's the same thing with us. When we impose anything upon the psyche because of an intellectualist picture which we make, then the psyche is going to rebel against it. We may consciously want to do what we are told, but out of the unconscious depths of the psyche, and they are very, very, very deep, there is a rebellion which says, no, I won't do it. So you perpetuate the conflict, and that means that you prevent living in communion. Can you imagine ultimate reality or God or this creative energy being against any part of what it creates? Can you imagine it taking sides with any particular aspect of its creation against another part? How absurd. Everything is contained in this unimaginable cosmos, chaos, harmony, this great relationship. Now we have to grow into, we have to let that sensitivity, which is pure mind in us, grow, emerge freely in such a way that the limitations imposed upon that sensitivity by our body and psyche are removed. They will disappear through understanding, through care, through love, through nurturing, through serving. If, for instance, we have a child is born unto us in the family, which is unfortunately in some way deformed or not quite healthy, what do we do? How do we restore it to health? Not by using a machine on it, not by saying it ought to be like this and it ought to grow like that, but we look after it, we love it, we give our care and attention to it, and we let it grow well, grow into health. You can't dip a glass into a big bucket which contains health and hand it over to the child. You can't do it. It is life which lives us. It is the unknown and the unknowable which releases this pattern, which is you yourself. And there is nothing else in the world like you yourself. You are absolutely unique. You are the one and only. And bear this in mind. The entire cosmos has been involved in releasing you, the individual, into being. In actual fact, in ultimate fact, we are in total relationship with the cosmos. That is the actual fact. We are ignorant of that. But because we lack skill, we lack wisdom, our inner sensitivities aren't fully grown, then that actual fact is spoiled. It is distorted by our shortcomings. And the cure for the shortcomings is understanding this thing which is loving wisdom and wise love. And that is also truth and goodness and beauty for us as far as we can go. And it's very soon that we reach our limits. We must recognize that fact. Otherwise, we get conceited and we think, oh, I have grown now. I am the perfect human being. I am the great teacher. I am the saint, the Maharishi, the so-and-so, the so-and-so. I am no thing. Nothing. That is the reality of the I am. As far as I as an ordinary human being am concerned, I am nothing, nothing. It is this transcendent reality, this transcendent whole, which functions through this. And if this, the person called myself, can awake to that transcendence and let it work freely through the organism, then this organism, this man, who has his own particular name, lives in communion. You see how many illusions we have to free ourselves from. Lots and lots of illusions and delusions. And remember, we cannot take our illusions and our mistakes and say, ah, this was a mistake, throw it out of the window. Why can't I do that? Why can't I put it into the waste paper basket or the dustbin and sweep it away and have it swept away? Because those illusions and delusions, those faults in my character, in my nature, what we commonly call the vices and so forth, they are my psyche. That is the psyche. I can't throw it out of the window. If there is something wrong with a part of the body, I don't immediately take a knife, cut it out and throw it out, like I throw away the skin of the potato which I have peeled. It can't be done that way. A surgeon might have to perform an operation, but how are you to perform an operation on the psyche? You can't catch hold of it. It has no organs like a liver or a kidney or a heart which you can deal with separately from the rest of the body. The psyche is something which functions as a whole all the time. Isn't that so? We forget that. But when you are aware, you are conscious of all this, that is to say, you become conscious of your own self and of all other selves around you in this awakened, transformed manner, that awakening is the diagnosis and the medicine and the healing of the illness of the psyche. You see, if we want reality, if we are concerned with the truth, then we have to be our own doctor. We have to be our own psychologist, which means we have to look into our nature. Just look. I said, let there be listening. Now, let there be looking. Just looking. Without judgments, but pure observation. And the healing process can take place by itself. It is in the nature of that which is alive to heal itself. Every biologist knows that every cell of the body has certain outstanding characteristics. It has self-motivation, self-reproduction, and it has the power of self-healing. If it is hurt too much and smashed, well, that's the end of the cell. But that is the nature of the living creature, that he heals himself. He allows the healing to take place. This is very important. Now you'll see at once that in all this, the brain plays a part which, if we really understood, would prevent us from falling into the trap of thinking that the brain is the supreme controller. It is the controller in a very limited sphere and in a very limited way. The brain is not the mind in its fullness. It is the root, the concrete physical root, because of which this energy, mysterious energy called mind, produces in each particular body the particular psyche, the way that man will tend to react in thought and feeling and so on. The brain has to become a pure instrument of observation. When the brain takes charge and begins to rule, then Mephistopheles inside us is ruling. You see why? The brain is the repository of the collected experiences of our life. Experiences which are interpreted through our psychical activity in a very misleading way. And above all, in a way which makes us self-centered all the time. Sit quietly for 2 minutes. And this is the right sort of place in which to sit quietly for 2 minutes. Absolutely still, and watch the process in the brain. It's constantly talking. And almost every sentence will have the word I. Almost every sentence will be a sentence which expresses what I want, I would like, I must do, I must gain, I must be rid of this, that and the other which I don't like, and so on. This is what the brain is doing all the time. Brain is a lovely Mephistopheles. But when all this chatter of the brain, all this reacting of the brain ceases, and the senses function freely, really listening, really looking, really touching, and so forth, when that happens, this transcendent reality takes charge. When the brain is quiet and you are really seeing, then mind takes over and there is total seeing. You see the whole. You don't see the little bit that you want to see. You know the phrase we have, wishful thinking. This is not thought. In the deep sense, the thought in the mind of God. If we can understand this, we'll awaken to the meaning, say, of the first chapter of Genesis, where it is said, and God said, he used the word, the word of power, the creative word. In Hebrew, the ma'amar. I hope I'm pronouncing the word correctly. I'm not certain. That creative sound, when that creative sound is there, that which the sound represents immediately comes into being. That's the thought in the mind of God. A creative power is my thought. Are my words creative? It would be far better to say, and God minded. This universal creative power, this universal creative energy, God minded, and there immediately was. You get a totally different impression of the meaning of mind, then, in relation to psyche. Now, the brain is the most concrete expression of mind. In us, in our waking state, if the brain functions purely as the instrument of observation and does not take control and get in charge, that's for the managing director himself, not for the clerk to take charge. Then the brain will not be a usurper of authority. Authority comes from transcendence itself, not from me, the limited individual. If we can begin to understand these things, then we can live in such a manner that we shall be expressing life in communion. Now don't read this as a system of philosophy propounded by me. Because if you do, you'll get caught in the prison house of words and concepts. And they are only pictures. They are not the reality. Don't take it as a system of philosophy. You have listened. Let the living listening produce a living result by itself. And you will find happiness and compassion and understanding grow in yourselves.